ようこそどうぞはじめまして。
Hello everyone, and welcome to the Glorio Chat, the most adorable anime podcast on the internet.
Are we, okay, here's my question, are we kawaii, or are we arrow kawaii?
No, we don't do that anymore.
I think there's only one show that we might have the arrow on, but we'll get to that later. There's the spoiler, the teaser for everyone out there, but... Yes,
you started this, Marlon.
Yes, it is my.
You're gonna carry that weight.
If anyone is curious what our in joke is, there, just go back through our year end posts and Marlon's annual Ero Kawaii award thing
for being simultaneously smutty and cute.
Yes, so that is a thing. So yeah, as you heard, you know, we have Marlon returning on the podcast, so we'll just go ahead and. Introduce who we have on today. We have Marlon is with us.
Yeah, glad to be back. It's been a while.
Marlon, I feel like our anime tastes have been in sync the past couple months, so I'm kind of glad to have you on. I feel like I've been letting everybody talk about all their other shows, and I want to get into stuff that we're into this week. So
yeah, I found it's almost scary how in sync our tastes have been in like the past year, you know, like through Rakugo. You know, watching, what was the last? Yeah, like everything this season, like, you know, the top three cute shows, the ones that I think are going all the way, are the three that we stuck with from the very beginning.
Too bad we didn't record a podcast when Yamada and Seven Witches were on, huh?
Oh, man. Yeah, we could have talked about that for
days. Being the only two people in the world that actually watched that. Yes. Yeah, so that's basically what we're going to talk about this week. We're gonna catch up on some of the cute shows airing. It's kind of the defining characteristic of the season, I would say. There's so many of them, so we'll get into that in a minute. Just other intros here. I have Iroh.
Hi.
With us as always. So it would not be the Glorio Chat without Iroh. And of course, I am Gel, Supreme Emperor of the GlorioBlog.com. And yeah, let's talk about some anime. But
great.
Just first of all, how are things going, guys? Are you excited for the anime awards later tonight?
It's in Hollywood. I could drive if I wanted there. If I wanted, I could just drive there.
Are there still tickets available? Because it's
tickets are still available, as far as I can see.
It's actually like something you can go to.
Yeah. So let's see here. Anime's biggest night live from Los Angeles, California. Ceremony begins 7 p.m. PST.
So it's kind of like those original Spike Game Awards where it's like they just try and pack the crowd and make people excited about everything.
I guess. I've got a page open here. Let's see. Celebrate with Crunchyroll, anime fans from around the world, and the biggest anime personalities and talent in the industry. Live from the historic Ricardo Montalban Theater in Hollywood, California.
Oh man, Ricardo Montalban.
Don't miss anime's biggest nights. The 2018 Anime Awards Experience. All winners announced live, including Anime of the Year. Christopher Sabat, the voice of Vegeta, honored as our first industry icon.
See, I told you they were going to get at least someone from Funny.
The biggest anime personalities and talent on stage, including ProZD, Freddie Wong, Todd Haberkorn, Giguk, Lily Pichu, Mike Daniels from the Green Bay Packers.
Anime icon. Yes. Oh my god. Yeah, that's I don't know who any of those people are, so.
Yeah, for a second I was thinking of the guy Aziz Ansari's character in Parks and Rec, but I think that's Tom Haberkorn.
Todd Haberkorn is Funimation voice actor.
Okay.
You'll know him as Ling Yao from Fullmetal Brotherhood and Furo Prochinezo from Bakugo. Yeah,
that's relevant in 2018, sure.
Whoa! I mean, technically, Bakano, there's no longer a legal way to watch that show.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, so that's, it sounds like they're trying to be the Game Awards for anime, and which was already the Oscars for video games, so, I don't know.
Nobody watches the Oscars anymore.
Yeah, I don't want to, like, you know, I'm kind of being sort of sarcastic about it. But I don't think it's a bad idea. I just don't really care for award shows usually that much.
Yeah. I just don't think they have the pull that they used to.
I don't think I was particularly impressed with any of the anime award nominees.
Yeah.
At least some of them.
I think my main problem with it is it's just open public voting, which I think is a terrible way to do awards. And then it just becomes a popularity contest.
They're not helping themselves with some of these like categories. Best girl, best boy. Just say like, I don't know, best heroine, or you know, best hero, or best protagonist. Like that, best girl and best boy makes it seem like it's just a Twitter thing or something like that.
It's very like
it kind of is.
I feel like that terminology is linked in with the anime fandom.
I'm not.
It also has like harem series connotations.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right? Oh yeah. Definitely.
Yeah, I don't have so much of a problem with that. It's just like with like, for example, the Anime of the Year award. They have some solid nominees on there, like Made in Abyss and Rakugo are on there. But
one and two anime,
coincidentally, are number one and number two anime of the year, according to theglorioblog.com. But they also have My Hero Academia on there, and we know that's going to win because it's a popularity contest. So, I think that kind of dampens the whole experience for me. Yeah. You're not really naming the, you know, popularity is not best. And then it just comes down to who watched, you know, what show had the most people watching it. But I mean, I think the idea is fine. I think Crunchyroll does a good job promoting themselves, kind of being the key.
It'd be a little weirder if they had like Anime News Network, like, you know, do it like the Oscars do it, where they just have journalists and industry figures handle it. Because for the most part, I imagine not every industry figure actually watches anime.
Well, I mean, and,
like, there aren't enough journalists to really get a good poll of them.
I mean, you could say that about the Oscars too, or the Grammys, or
that's the big problem with the Oscars.
That was
right?
that was quite the uproar this year with the animated category, right? Because like everyone picked. Like one of the nominees was like
Boss Baby.
Boss Baby. Or
no,
whatever.
Let's not have a silent voice nominated.
Right, but Boss Baby is
nominated because
cool, it's all, you know, 80-year-old white men who have no idea what those.
Well, you'd think they'd be.
Grandkids, I guess.
21-year-old white men. You'd think they'd be into sort of online ordinal scale, man. See that teenage nipple.
did they go there?
So why do you think it sold like what, like 1,000 copies? How many copies?
I'm sure it sold at least 1,000 copies.
Yes.
Wasn't it the case like in a normal anime they would have a shampoo bottle, and so like in original screenings they had it that way,
and then
the Blu-ray they cut it out.
I'm sorry, guys. That sounds too well researched.
we watched that movie.
I just got a good memory, okay?
It's bad.
So, anyway, anime awards are on tonight. We're recording Saturday, ironically. So, by the time people are actually listening to this, it'll probably be Monday and the awards will already have happened. So, maybe I'll be proven wrong and Rakugo will rightfully win Anime of the Year and I'll be right with the world. I just will not count on that.
Made in Abyss.
Yeah, well, that's a different discussion for another time.
You're outvoted in this particular group, Hero.
Yeah.
Whatever, man.
Made in Abyss was great, but Rakugo is like one of the best anime in the past 10 years. Anyway, for an easy transition, I will mention that one of the Anime of the Year nominees is March Comes in Like a Lion. And that is one of the shows we wanted to talk about today. We haven't talked about it in a while because they've been on break for they're on break for the Olympics, right? Technically,
yeah, because their TV station is basically the NBC of Japan, so they broadcast the Olympics.
Is that NHK or
I think so?
So I think we're in either the second or third week of the break.
The cops are here.
Hopefully,
anime police.
The anime police heard me talking bad about the anime awards. They're coming for me. I live in a bad neighborhood, everyone, so that happens every now and then. Sorry about that. But so they've been on break, but before they went on break, it was certainly one of the best shows going. It's been one of the best shows going for a while now.
Oh, yeah.
And
I almost feel like how the voting works, it's kind of unfair because I imagine most people were voting on it based on the recent stuff that didn't happen last year. And, you know, like, not to say that the first season wasn't great. It was fantastic. But the second season has blown it out of the water.
Yeah, well, it definitely had the single strongest arc by far with Hinata and the bullying arc, I guess we would call it.
Right.
But yeah, let's kind of start from the beginning a little bit as far as, you know, people who haven't been watching the show. We're in the second season right now. And so we're kind of, by the time it's all said and done, we're probably pushing about 40 episodes total, right? Oh, yeah. Something like that by the time the season's over. I
remember being like 37 or something like that, the last one.
Yeah.
Somewhere around there.
And it's kind of weird with the break. It's probably going to be a pretty short season this season. But we'll probably end up with somewhere around 40 episodes. So we're kind of late into the series at this point. And I don't know if it's going to end there or there'll be room for more or whatever, because I think the manga's still going, right?
Oh, yeah. The manga, I looked and I think after last season, we still weren't even like halfway through the amount of manga chapters they have.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's a really...
So they could easily do it for another season.
It's a really popular show. So, yeah, we might end up seeing more of that for sure. But, yeah, as far as the general premise goes, I don't know, Marlon, you want to give like a quick recap of like what the show is about?
Yeah. So, basically, it's, you know, it surrounds Ray. He's a shogi player. So, like, for a basic comparison, it's like chess. You know, there's very similar piece names. They have pawns, rooks, and bishops, and they move much like they do in chess. But there's small differences. You know, like there's 9 squares by 9 squares instead of 8 by 8 on a regular chessboard. And so he's a professional player. So even though he's like a 17-year-old at the start of the series, he makes his entire living based off of that. And he had a really tough childhood. His parents and sister die when he's like 7 or 8 years old when he first got into shogi. And he comes under adoption by this shogi professional that basically, you know, like to the detriment of his own family, like turns him into this amazing shogi player. And so there's just this really interesting tension in his backstory.
It makes his family life really complicated, and
yeah,
he's had a rough life up to this point. So where the show starts, yeah,
and so where the show starts is really like his budding relationship with this family of 3 daughters and their grandfather, and it or 3 sisters, I mean, and yeah, it's really just this sweet story about kind of growing and also overcoming your past, you know. Understanding your old wounds and healing them slowly.
Yeah, I think maybe healing is the key word I always say in describing the show, because he's kind of at his like lowest point when he meets Akari, who's the oldest sister, and they've had a rough life too. They're currently still experiencing a pretty rough life because they lost their parents as well, and you know the oldest sister's kind of forced to raise the other two, and it's you know kind of a bad situation that they're making the best of, and so they kind of you know, help him heal and grow as well. And it's like, overall, it's a really, you know, we decided to include it in the cute podcast here because it does have some like really adorable, like really sweet moments.
Oh, yes.
But it's kind of, I think it's a bigger, like it covers more territory. You know, there are dramatic, intense moments and other things going on, which is kind of why I didn't want to include it when we were doing, you know, our cute anime battle royale on the website.
Right. It wouldn't have been very fair, honestly.
No, it wouldn't have been fair because it's like in a different.
Yeah, it's like a legitimate drama that just, you know, it happens to have cute moments because the author is the same author as Honey and Clover.
It's
an older show. Like that's the first Noitamina show actually was Honey and Clover.
It's that kind of show.
Yeah, so it's very drama heavy, but it, you know, the artist is very good at drawing, you know, really cute looking scenery and characters. And, you know, there's like in the last episode, they have an entire scene where the sisters just talk about making the perfect soft boiled egg. And like,
yeah, you know, it's all right.
Like,
okay.
Like the cutest scene you will ever see in your life, especially because it's a little unfair also because one of the sisters is like 5 years old or something, so she's just the cutest little girl you could ever imagine.
What about Yotsuba?
Once she gets animated, we'll have to compare.
She was animated in Nyanbo.
Oh, yeah, for like 2 seconds in the end of Nyanbo, yeah.
No dialogue.
Yeah, no that doesn't count. Yeah, so it's... I think one of the things I like the best about it is it just strikes a good balance between... Like, it does get serious and heavy, but it never gets too serious or heavy. And, like... But it also doesn't kind of pull its punches on sort of the, you know, the hard realities of life as well. So, like, there's always, like, a nice balance of that without going too far in either direction. You know, it's not... I guess maybe sometimes they get maybe a little too idealistic or something. Like, I'm not going to spoil too much, but, like, when they get into his relationship with his adopted sister, I always kind of feel like they gloss over some of that a bit, and that gets kind of weird. But
it is really strange. I don't know if it's maybe because the audience is a little different from this manga to Honey and Clover, but yeah, it definitely seems like there were some harsher elements to the relationships, or the more just like, you know, gritty, realistic elements to the relationships in that manga that are absent, like you said, in Kyoko's relationship with that older man. I'm forgetting his name.
There's a Goto, I think.
Yeah, Goto.
Yeah, so she's just like in a relationship with, she's like 20 or something, and he's like in his 40s, and it's
talking about After the Rain now.
No, well, she is technically an adult,
And he's married.
Yeah, it's a weird, like, not divorced. Like, and when they first introduce it, it's like a really like toxic, bad relationship, and Goto is kind of clearly a bad dude, but then like they kind of soften that all up later, and that's kind of weird. But yeah, other than that, I think my only other criticism might be in the first season they dwelt a little bit too much on the actual shogi part, because personally I don't care about the shogi. Like, that's just kind of like the framing device for the story to, you know, give Ray a job and right. Something to, you know,
so like when y'all were talking about season one, I was like, oh, it's that shogi show,
right?
And from what I'm hearing, that's not really what it's about.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
at the time I was like, well, I don't care about shogi, I'm not gonna watch any more of this.
For they did an arc of probably like 5 or 6 episodes long on like basically had almost nothing to do with Ray. It was about this other character who he's a cool guy, but like it was just about his life as a shogi player and, you know, the stuff he was going through. And I'm like, yeah, I mean, I like this guy, but it's not what I came to the show for. And they kind of spent like half a season on him. I'm like, yeah, mm-hmm. that was like the end of the first season, which was like last winter, I think. And so it kind of left on like a kind of a bad taste in our mouth going into season two.
Yeah. It's kind of that author.
Right. But like, just, I think our opinion toward the end of that was like, oh, well, I guess this is a shogi show now. So, you know, and then,
yeah.
And then season two came around and that was, things changed.
I mean, they at least had him go back to the sisters for one last scene before the end. But yeah, you're right. It was a lot of just, yes, joking. And you can tell, like, the author really likes doing their research. Because, yeah, the shogi is so meticulous. But also, once they get into that arc where we talked about where bullying becomes the, you know, the biggest problem, there's so many realistic elements to the bullying and, like, you know, talking about all the details of the problems, how you can't just, like, you know, go to the other person's parents because the other person's parents are obviously not going to think that, you know, like, each person's not going to think that their child's a bad influence in the school, and how that does eventually blow up.
Yeah, they handled that so well. I mean, clearly the author did their research, and I wouldn't be surprised if that's something they had experience with themselves. And
right.
That was just great to see, because a lot of times if anime does try to handle a, you know, more serious real life topic like that, it you know, often stumbles on itself in one way or the other. But yeah, they clearly put a lot of work into that, and it really paid off, not just you know, for that positive message, but also developing, you know, Hinata as a character and just seeing how strong she is. And
oh yeah.
Yeah. It was a really great return to form, coming into season two, and just kind of coming back to what really is the heart of the show, which is, you know, Ray's relationship with the sisters.
So is this a show that I should put on the list to watch all at once at a great expense when it's time for anime of the year?
when we're making the December push. Yeah.
This is going to be the Yamato of this year for sure.
Yeah. It's definitely one of the best shows from the past couple years. And I don't know, just from our point of view, maybe we haven't quite given it as much attention or credit just because of the way it's been broken up and dodging our anime of the year discussions. or maybe just also having the unfortunate, timing of being in the same year as Rakugo, because I probably would have had it, you know, in my number one discussion last year otherwise. But
right. I like waiting for shows to be over before I give them, you know, like a consideration on the year end stuff. Otherwise, I would have definitely put it number two behind Rakugo.
Yeah, and that's kind of where it got weird, because technically the first season ended last winter, so like, you know, we could kind of judge it based on that. And then, but then it was right. Picking up again right when we were voting for our year-end rewards again. So the timing is just kind of weird. I think it ended up on our list anyway, but you know, maybe just because it ended up lower on the list doesn't mean it wouldn't have been deserving maybe of number one in other years.
Yeah, I mean, the same thing did happen to Rakugo the year before it got number two. It was like number nine in the 2016.
Yeah, that's
nobody watched
because we had to get sucked into on season two, which Artemis was pushing us on that one. But and also this, I ended up watching it solely because of the amazing season two opening song, which was like, oh, I like that, looks like a time skip. I'm a sucker for time skips. But March Comes In Like a Lion is, you know, it is a cute show, but it's so many other things. And definitely one of the best anime from the past couple of years and worth your time. Now's a good time to catch up since they're on break. And I guess there will probably have time for maybe one more quick little arc, like, you know, maybe three episodes or whatever before wrapping up this run.
Catch up before Spring's avalanche appears.
Yeah. Let's not think about that. Let's.
You're right.
Yeah. Cause I mean, if there's anything the last 3 weeks has shown me is like, I so missed that show. Like, I kept coming every Saturday being like, oh yeah, it's going to be great. Oh wait, all there is Franks and Pop Team Epic. Which, I mean, not that I hate Pop Team Epic, but it's really hit or miss. And Franks has just been, ugh.
So I am waiting for next week
when Lion comes back, because like, it's just been this giant hole in my heart waiting for it.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel like with Pop...
Is it going to come back in like a lion?
All right.
I do wonder if they've been playing...
And it will be March. It will be March by the time it comes back.
Will March come in like a lion?
Iroh, if I...
Is that going to be like a title drop?
Iroh, if we were a half hour deeper in this podcast, I would have just ended it right now. But we still have more anime to talk about, though. So, yeah, definitely check out... check that out. Now's a good time to catch up. And so let's go on to another show that I wanted to talk about. I mentioned last week, I gave a shout out to Degashikashi, which is another show we are in the second season of this year. And they did some different things this season. And just to kind of give some perspective of where we're coming from, the first season aired maybe a year or two ago, not too long ago. It was a full 12 episodes, full length episodes.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's kind of this easygoing, laid back anime comedy where they talk about candy a lot. The general idea of the show is there's this boy named Coconuts. That's his name.
A bunch of coconuts.
His name is actually Kokonotsu, but everybody calls him Coconuts, and I'm talking like in the show they call him Coconuts. That's not just like what the fandom calls him. And his father owns a Degashi shop, which Degashi is like
traditional Japanese snack sweets.
Yeah, they're like really cheap, like mostly manufactured, you know, candy and snacks. So like a Dagashi shop is like the closest American equivalent I can think of is like a penny candy store.
Yeah, like I had this kind of thing growing up. It was called Candy. And it was like the place that every kid went to after school. Like, you know, they would sell stuff from, you know, they would have full dollar candy bars, but they would sell little penny pieces of Bazooka Joe bubblegum or Tootsie Rolls, things like
right.
that.
Right. So, it's kind of like that. And the point is, it's a very like old fashioned, outdated thing that doesn't really exist anymore. And, you know, so his dad has right. this like, it's like a rundown beat up Dagashi shop. And he wants Kokonuts to take it over. He doesn't want to do it. Because he wants to be a manga artist, even though he's awful. And so one day, of course, this beautiful girl shows up, and there's more to it. But basically, she wants to convince him to take over the shop. And she's like obsessed with Dagashi. So like
she's some kind of like candy heiress.
Yeah,
right?
Like I said, there's more like complicated reasons why she wants him to take it over. But she's basically the like heiress to some big candy corporation. And yeah, so like the show, what it boils down to week is like this crazy girl who is like this force of nature that bursts into the room every episode and just starts talking about candy to try to get Kokonuts all excited about it. And eventually he does, because secretly deep down, of course, he does, you know, like Dagashi and all that. And he's very good at selling it. That's kind of one of the other big things is right. like he's terrible at manga, but he's great at selling Dagashi. So, you know, they have to have that irony in there. But that's really...
Dagashi's secretly drugs.
Yes. Yeah, that's the kind of one of the more unique characteristics of the designs of the show. All the characters have like weird concentric circles in their eyes and they all look stoned out of their mind.
With like tiny, tiny pupils, just... huge whites in their eyes all the time.
Why do you think that one guy wears sunglasses all the time?
Yeah, they're all baked. That's why they're so obsessed with snacks. It all makes sense. But so like it's the first season was very very structured, like kind of like two segments per episode of let's talk about this candy in the first episode and let's talk about this snack in the second part of the episode, and it was just kind of like this fun, lighthearted, very easygoing type of show. Gets slightly pervy sometimes, which is why I did not decide to include this in the battle royale. It kind of puts it in that category. It's mostly innocent, I think. From my, you know, that's everyone's mileage will vary on that.
I'll give it credit for having a swimsuit episode where the girl actually wore a shirt over the swimsuit.
Yeah, it's not like super gross, like, you know.
And it was a one piece. It wasn't like she was wearing some skimpy bikini.
It's not like super
like
gross, or like the girls are like tied up and embarrassed and stuff like that. Like
they're just like eating candy like it's a blowjob or something.
Yeah. Well, yes, but it's like, look, I'm not trying to like over defend it here. I'm just trying to say I personally find it's within acceptable levels, and like even like yeah,
it's no too love.
Even yeah, like even in season two, for example, there's a they kind of do like a. Oh, she's taking a bath. Don't you want to peep on her type of thing? And Kokonuts gives this whole speech that's basically like, well, yes, I want to see her naked, but consent is sexy type of thing. and then they don't peep on her. So like, it's not like gross and like mean spirited type of stuff. But anyway, it is there though. So be warned if, you know, anybody is interested in checking it out.
Is there still like a candy fever dream every time she talks about it? Because I just remember there was like that one episode where it was like Fist of the North Star, but with this one really cheap candy that nobody likes.
Yeah, so they'll do stuff like that where she'll because this the main girl Hotaru is like she's crazy. The best metaphor I can think of. She's kind of like the Cat in the Hat.
Oh boy,
where she kind of right. just like blows in with the wind. And, you know, they go on these crazy imaginary adventures about talking about candy, and then she's gone again by the end of the episode. You know, it's very, but that was like very, very much the dependable, reliable structure of the show in the first season. In the second season, they've shaken things up quite a bit. So the biggest thing is they cut to half episode length. So they're like 12 minutes now. And
but you said it was like two segment format already.
Yeah, so, that's what I was thinking coming into season two is, well, the episodes were already cut, and it was basically two 12-minute episodes every week anyway. So, all right, that makes sense. But then they actually – well, they do that for the first couple episodes with the same format where it's like, okay, we're going to talk about this candy this week. And then they kind of pull the plug on everything. So, like, the show takes place in the summertime. And it's very much like a summertime, like, you know, nobody has any responsibilities. Everyone can just sit around eating candy and probably getting high and talking about it.
Cars and fields.
Right, yeah. It's kind of like the whole, part of the whole laid-back vibe of the show. And toward the end of season, like, in the last episode of season one, they kind of hint, like, Hotaro is like, I can't keep doing this forever. At some point, you're going to have to make a decision. But they don't really go any further with it. They do come back to that in season two, where summer ends, and she's like, I gotta go. And she hasn't been in the show for the past four or five episodes or something like that.
Really?
Yeah. She's actually gone. I'm sure she'll be back. But yeah, so it's kind of shifted over back to the plot of the show, where now Coconut's, he's basically forced to take over the shop. And then, because the other thing is his dad, like, breaks his leg or something, so he can't work. And then he's basically forced to run the shop, or they will have, like, no income. And at the same time, a, like, huge convenience store thing opens across the street. And he, like, has this face-off with the crazy manager as, like, his new rival. And now, like, the show is about him. Now Coconuts is all fired up to...
came about gentrification.
Yeah, so now he's all fired up to save the Degashi shop because he wants it to be there for when Hotaru comes back. And he wants to beat this convenience store guy. And
yeah, fuck Junez.
Yeah, exactly. And this last episode, the one yesterday, he just... they replaced one weird girl with a different... weird woman who's like actually an adult woman in her 20s who is basically he hires to take over the shop when he's in school. And it's like now like the whole show just feels different now. They still snuck in a couple candy facts, but now it's like there's almost like a plot to it, and I almost kind of wish it was still full episodes
because now there's a plot at the half.
Yeah, so now it's not, yeah, so now it's like, yeah, so now it's not like a very strictly segmented, you know, rigid schedule of let's talk about this candy this week or whatever. And yeah, I'm just really enjoying it because, you know me, I like dumb anime comedies with heart, and that's kind of what they're going for. And if anything, I just kind of respect that they're willing to shake up the show as much as they did in the second season. And I know the manga just got announced that it's going to be ending soon too. So there might actually be an ending, which would be shocking. So yeah, it's a pretty good show if you're looking for something to watch, and it's short since it's only half episodes, so you can catch up on it pretty quick. Well, at least season two, you'd have to go back and watch season one, but
but you really have to though.
Yeah, I feel like
there's enough stuff that actually happened.
It's one of those things where it's. I feel like it's one of those things where, yes, you would understand the plot because there's really not like that much of a plot. But I also think it just has more impact when Hotaru leaves after you've gone through, you know, 14 episodes of, you know, the same thing of everyone just kind of having fun and like, oh, now we're kind of getting a little bit serious. I think it has more impact when you've been through the experience over, you know, the course of several hours. But, yeah, and it is, you know, it's still ultimately kind of a cute, funny show, and I think it's worth checking out if you are into that kind of thing like I am. So,
well, there's so many this season.
Oh, yes, that is the thing, though. There are so many cute shows this season, and as we keep alluding to, so many that we did round them up to fight to the death in our battle royale.
Okay, so 100 cute shows drop out of a plane onto an island.
Yes, yes.
Would laid back camp be best suited for that one then?
For just strictly survival?
Yeah.
I don't know. One of the main girls in there is pretty dumb. So, the there's like the two main girls. One of them is very extremely competent, so yeah, she would be good at that. But the other one is basically Yui from K-On. So
oh geez.
Yeah, so let's get into some of these other cute shows that we've been watching. We've been doing the Battle Royale now for I think 5 or 6 weeks or something. I think maybe 6 weeks.
God, so near the end of the season.
So like a whole lot of shows have already been cut out. So we want to focus on the ones that are still around. And as we mentioned, Laid Back Camp is one of them. And I got to admit, I did not like this show in the first episode. I thought it was going to, if it wasn't for some of one or two other shows being worse in the early weeks, probably would have got cut.
Yeah, because it didn't sound that great, at least like as far as a premise.
Yeah, well.
So what is the premise?
Well,
here?
See, that's the thing. None of these shows sound great as a premise. You know, with any cute show, it's going to be like there's a bunch of schoolgirls and they do something, and that's about it. So it's really all in the execution. But with Laid Back Camp, it's basically this girl moves to a new town, and it sounds like everything we've ever heard before. And she, you know, accidentally stumbles into the outdoor activities club that goes camping, and it sounds like every other girls club show ever, but there's like I said, it's all in the execution. So like the first episode's like that, where you know you get this one like really hyper competent girl that loves camping, and she bumps into this, you know, idiot savant that's gonna die if she doesn't save her, and you know she gets in, and that girl now gets into camping. And right. Then she finds out that there's a club. So, like, they go into episode 2, and it's like, okay, so now they're going to recruit.
Camping facts.
Yeah, they throw in camping facts and stuff. Overall, the tone is, like, a little bit different. It's because, like, it's called Laid Back Camp, and it is, in fact, a laid-back show about camping. There's a lot of, like, really kind of quiet, you know, let's just enjoy nature type of shots and it's very pleasant to watch in that regard. It kind of reminds me of, I don't know if either of you guys watched Nonon Biori.
That's about mountain climbing.
I see it. I saw a few episodes.
No, that was,
No, that's the one with all the little kids in the town in the mountains, where like they...
Yeah, it's like a really rural school.
Yeah.
With like a bunch of kids of different ages that, but a lot of that show is like very like quiet, no talking, just like soak in the scenery porn type of scenes and things like that. And it's just kind of a very like easygoing, relaxing type of show. So like the general tone is kind of like that. And to their credit too, it's not like there's like no fan service or anything. There's like, it's like you could, it's very family friendly even.
For once.
Yeah. How often does that happen? Right. So that's part of the criteria for even being in the Battle Royale. Like I wanted to cut all that out. It had to be like totally clean, family friendly stuff, like just pure cute shows. But yeah, as far as what makes it different, it's like the second episode, they go into, you know, the kind of dumb girl stumbling into the outdoor activities club, and they all try to get the first girl she met, the one that's really good at camping, to join. And you're like, okay, so eventually they're going to wear her down. They'll join and they'll go on their camping club. And that just never happens. So, like, basically what ends up happening is, like, I think what makes a show special is just, like, this the first girl that's, like, really good at camping. Her name is Rin. She's a very interesting character because, like, she's kind of quiet. She likes to keep to herself. And I feel like with most anime, like, then it, like her character arc would be, oh, now she's got to learn to open up and be friends with everybody. And, you know, and it's like, no, she's just, that's just how she is. And that's cool. And she still goes camping by herself, but she also likes being friends with the other girls. Like she doesn't mind hanging out with them or anything. It's just like, when it comes to the camping, I like to go camp by myself. So they'll go on trips, and like, she'll go on one trip somewhere else. And then the camping club will go like to another place, but they'll still be like texting pictures back and forth. And a lot of the dialogue and stuff too is like really like kind of, I don't know if we quite say it's like realistic, but like when they're texting each other back and forth, they're like giving each other a hard time, like kind of stuff that you would really do with your friends. I don't know. That's just kind of a nice, again, this is all execution stuff that just makes it a nice thing to watch. Like, or like, you know, they'll give each other a hard time about stuff and just like roll with it. Like one of my favorite jokes is the Rin tells like the dumb girl, like, you know, you talk like a grandma, so she just kind of like leans into it, and she's like, oh, dearie, would you please bring me the thing or whatever? Like, they, you know, they just kind of roll with it. Just little things like that that make it like really nice and pleasant to watch. I don't think it's like anime of the year material or anything, but it ended up becoming a much better show than it looked like in the beginning. And that's why it's still sticking around this deep into the competition. So,
yeah, depending on how School Babysitters does next week, I mean, it could make it to the top three.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, I would have never expected it to contest for the top three. But with School Babysitters kind of floundering around a bit here and there.
Tell me about this School Babysitters.
Yeah, so let's talk about that one, because I've got that next on the list here. Probably the most unique premise of all these shows.
I feel like this one, I've heard you like saying like, oh, that was good, and then the next week I'll hear you saying like, that was shitty.
Yeah, Marlon, why don't you give the breakdown and the premise on that one?
Okay, so Ryu is like a 15-year-old boy with a 3 or 4-year-old brother named Kotaro, and his parents have just died.
Oh, okay.
In a giant accident.
And we mean the start of the show is like right after the funeral. Right. Like they just died.
It's not like weeks before before the events of the beginning of the show. And so he apparently he is seen by this woman who also lost her son and daughter-in-law in this same crash. And she empathizes with them and wants to take care of them. But for some reason, so she's the headmaster of a school, and she also wants him to work for free as a babysitter at their... Like,
I don't know about this.
Yeah, it's really bizarre. Because for one thing, I'm like, these teachers are working at the same time he's in class. So basically, he's just like... Is he just there for like 3 hours while the teachers do work after school? Or does he like do babysitting in the middle and has to not take classes?
I think it's only
a club or something.
Because they have like the one adult guy that's there all the time that I think he watches them during classes.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I think that's how it works. But he's an awful person, but that's another
thing. Right.
But yeah.
And yeah, so we'll get to that. The baby or the daycare is full of these cute one tone kids, which I mean, kids can be one tone. That's kind of more acceptable.
Sure.
And it eventually starts introducing more high school characters. Like one of the kids' brothers is in the same grade as Ryu, or is it Ryuichi? Does that sound right?
I think they call some of them might call him Ryu for short, but yeah, it's Ryuichi is his full name.
And so you know, it's kind of. You know, the typical club thing is like, you know, it seems it slowly grows in numbers or slowly grows in people that are at least interested in the characters. Like, the brother eventually joins the babysitting club.
Has anybody else actually joined the club, though, now that I'm thinking about it?
I don't think so. I'm imagining they're trying to get Inomata. So there's this class president who's, like, really strict, but really is soft on the inside.
I've never heard that before.
Yeah, so like, I imagine she's going to be in the club eventually.
Yeah, they kind of imply they're going that way. It's another, it's another show that has a bit of like the kind of like the healing process, because they do,
right,
at least early on. And I'm kind of, this one of my biggest disappointments is they haven't really touched on this anymore past the first couple episodes. But in the first couple episodes, you know, in between the, you know, funny kid hijinks, they would have these like really kind of poignant moments of Ryuichi dealing with his grief.
Right.
And I thought they handled it fairly well. I mean, maybe a little overly dramatic in an anime fashion, but still, you know, it was still, you know, emotionally satisfying to have that. And they kind of, they haven't really touched on that in a long time.
Seems like they've been kind of downplaying that in favor of, you know, introducing the characters or trying to flesh them out, which honestly is not necessary. Like, the more characters they introduce to the show, the worse it gets. Like, there's that one guy who might be a pedophile.
Yeah,
I know, right?
I don't. What is the? I don't understand the purpose of his character, because like they don't explicitly define whether he is a pedophile or not. All we know is he gets a nosebleed when he's around cute kids, and nobody really wants him. Nobody really wants him around, but they don't like.
I don't know about this.
I mean, the only I'm not going to defend it at all because he's awful. But he only appears like he's only on screen for maybe like 5 total minutes of the entire series. So it's not like he's a super regular character or anything. So you can kind of brush him aside, but it's still like there's a lot of like little problematic elements in there. Like I don't like when what's his name hits his brother and they have to move the camera away because they can't actually show him hitting him.
Oh yeah.
I guess the only other thing I would throw out as far as criticism is it does feel a little bit rushed in that, like you said, they just keep like throwing out new characters all the time and not giving them.
Slow it down.
Yeah, like I don't know if they're like rushing through. It's a manga, right? I don't know if they're just like rushing through chapters to get through it or whatever. But like, he has like the one girl. There's one of his classmates that's like totally in love with him. And I don't think they've ever talked. We have no idea who she is. They've never given any backstory or anything to who, other than that she's a girl in his class. We know nothing about her. She was carrying a tennis racket one time. So that's all we know. It was never stated whether she plays tennis, but we can assume. And so like this last episode, they kind of lean into like this brewing love triangle between this girl that we know absolutely nothing about and, you know, the class rep, Inumata. And it's like, I feel like maybe in the manga they might have given us a little more background or something. Maybe, hopefully, because otherwise, like, how are we supposed to take that?
Or is that the joke, maybe? Is like it would almost be like a meta joke that, like, we never even see them interacting, and yet she somehow is madly in love with him. They do kind of talk about how, like, he's basically popular with everyone because he's just a nice guy who's good looking.
No, and he's so responsible. He takes care of these children.
Right. Well, that's kind of the funny thing is that the girls say, well, no, we're not going to be rivals with you because we all know his brother's number one in his heart and he will never have room for anyone else.
Okay.
Yeah, because, I mean, I would expect that. I mean, if he's your only family member left alive.
Well, yeah, I mean, he's also basically a slave. So, like, going out with him would probably not be very fun anyway.
Indentured servant, maybe.
Yeah, fine. Let's call it. We'll be nice and call him an indentured servant. Well, that's the thing. That's the other thing that I kind of wish would come up more is the chairwoman that takes them in. She's like this eccentric old lady, and you know, of course, she comes off mean at first, and obviously the situation sounds bad on paper, but she ultimately ends up being a big softie at heart. And there's some nice moments that came out of that, but again, they have not come back to any of that, because really what I thought was going to be the special thing about the show was, you know, their depiction of grief and that healing process, you know, in the context of this kind of cute comedy. And they did that for the first couple of episodes and it was great. And part of it, you know, wasn't just Ryuichi, it was also the chairwoman who also lost her her family, and you know, them coming together and healing and grieving together. And now it's just kind of like dumb shoujo comedy. Is that fair?
Yeah, I would say so. I imagine they're going to have to bring it back at some point. But
yeah, I'm sure they will. But I would have liked that to be like a regular part of the show. And then maybe not every episode, but you know, when you're going 3 or 4 episodes without touching on it, then it's like, I don't know. I feel like it's a missed opportunity, maybe.
Right. And all the characters are still so one-dimensional. Like, yeah, that's what makes that part so interesting is that he's just the nice guy every other part of the show. But then whenever they touch into that grief, that it brings an extra dimension to him. Otherwise, yeah, everyone's just the same. You know, Inamata is always going to be really tsundere. You know, the brother is always going to be really mean, but actually loving his brother, even though he's like punching him in the face every other episode.
Well, we don't know because they have to move the camera
on the head.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It's just, there's definitely something there and it just doesn't always come together, or it's not coming together quite enough to like make it really good. You know, we didn't even touch on, so like the other characters, like probably half the characters are awful too. Like the ones that are just randomly. So like we mentioned the pedophile guy, the adult guy that actually like runs the daycare is a terrible person. He just like he sleeps all day and the kids like are like jumping off balconies and stuff like that. Like literally that happened in one episode where one of the kids ran off and was like jumping off the stairs. And Ryuichi just happened to be there to catch her.
Yeah, it reminded me a lot of Working, if you remember, like, the manager lady that's secretly Yakuza.
Right, but I...
Whoa, hang on.
In Working, though, like, that was different. Yeah, I probably have to think about...
He wasn't in charge of children.
Yeah, right, exactly. So, like, this guy, he's in charge of children, and at the very bare minimum should be preventing them from jumping off balconies. Right. And, you know, he's awful. There's the guy that wants to hook up with the married teacher. He was awful.
Oh, yeah, that was weird, too. Is it really not wrong to commit adultery? Yeah,
that provided some of the greatest...
Seriously, the crux of...
That provided some of the greatest, like, weirdest out-of-context, like, Seiren-level dialogue. Like, cause when Ryuichi just comes up to Inamani, he's like, what is your opinion of adultery?
like, what? I mean,
it probably
that
was
bad. Yeah, they had some great, like totally random, like things human beings have never said type of dialogue on that episode. But yeah, it was basically this kid is like in love with one of the teachers who's married, and one of her kids is at the daycare, and they do like a whole mini arc on that, and. You know, somehow they try to spin him as the good guy by the end. I don't know. It was dumb. Not as bad as the pedophile guy, or the alleged pedophile guy. But could have done
the weird like idol dad that whose sons don't love him.
Right, that was all part of the but he thought that the way they tried to justify it is like he thought the teacher wasn't married anymore, like her husband died or whatever. But he was really just a famous. It's the same guy, right?
He was like an explorer or something.
Yeah, he was like a. Okay, I started mixing up the actor guy and the explorer guy. That's a.
Yeah,
her husband was like a, I guess, explorer or something, or like an archaeologist or something.
Right,
he was like gone
or something.
However many months, whatever. It was dumb. There's a lot of just completely useless parts clogging up that show. When if they stuck to what is the core good parts, you know, I think it could have been a really good show. And I think it's still good. I think by the end of the season, we're going to forget it existed.
Right.
Two shows that we,
speaking of,
will probably not forget existed are what are, well, we'll see.
I think so. Takagi-san.
Yeah. So these are probably our two favorites of the remaining Battle Royale shows. And the first one is Takagi-san. I'm not going to attempt the weirdly non-localized title that Crunchyroll has up there. I don't know why they didn't come up with something, but they still have the full Japanese title on there. But Takagi-san is another one where I think if you just say the premise, it sounds at the very least vague, if not, you know, uninteresting, because it's really just... Did they ever officially say their age, or are we just speculating that they're 13?
I think we're just speculating 13, 14, because like they're just very young.
They're clearly like young middle school age. And it's this boy and a girl, and they are, you know, madly in love with each other and kind of dance around these psychological mind games you play when you have your first real crush.
AKA they're 13.
Right. So that's why we're speculating that they're probably 13. And, right. You know, the guy is just totally outclassed by Takagi, the girl, who is basically like Sherlock Holmes and Batman, to steal G's terminology, rolled into one.
He has like psychic powers or something. Or yeah, like that kind of ability to.
So they're always trying to like, because I think the Japanese title roughly translates something to like teasing Master Takagi or something like that. And so they're always trying to like tease each other and give each other a hard time. And she's so much, it's not even a contest. It's to the point where she doesn't even have to do anything. And the boy, Nishikata, just
Psychs himself out.
He just owns himself at this point.
Right, like he makes a completely, like this last episode, he makes a completely unnecessary bet, knowing that he had, like, that he basically bluffs, knowing
he's going to lose, and it just basically expecting her not to call his bluff, and it's like, come on, dude, you're just
right
dunking on yourself at this point.
I think it's a lot to do with what Jell said a couple weeks ago. That's like, you know, an actual 13-year-old boy would not know what to do in that scenario. Like, they would just be babbling with their mouths open the whole time.
Yeah, I don't know if I did have done things quite as dumbly as Nishikata, but I did some stupid things as a 13-year-old boy with my dumb puppy love crushes.
As we all have,
I'm sure.
Yeah.
So, I think that's what makes the show special, though, is because it kind of taps into, would it be fair to say nostalgia?
I think so.
Given the target audience, because I don't think it's aimed at 13-year-olds.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like it.
Yeah, and it gives a, I don't know, I want to say it's like realistic, but maybe kind of accurate feeling of, you know, your first crush and, you know, just being totally, baffled by how to deal with that. And it's kind of adorable most of the time.
Right. Like, that's usually when it says best.
It's a bit one note though, right? Like,
I wouldn't say that necessarily.
I don't know. Like, how many episodes in is it now? Like 6 or 7?
Mm-hmm.
I get the feeling every time I'm like, yeah, I get it. Or like, it's still cute, but
I think it's more for like the development in their relationship, because that is something I think that has actually been growing more and more with every episode.
Yeah, it's very subtle
and
slow, but there is definitely growth in their relationship. I'm just going to say they're dating, because in this last episode, she was like, okay, so it's a date then? And he's like, yeah. So,
like, yeah, dejected, like, acceptance.
He's past denial and he's moved on to acceptance.
Mm-hmm. They still have, but they do have, like, the weird segments with the side girls that are just not great.
Oh, yeah. Just
yeah, see, that is the biggest Achilles heel of the show. Because probably, what would you say, maybe 20% of the show, maybe even 30, is these segments with three of their classmates. And it doesn't even feel like it's written by the same person.
Oh, no, it's so much worse.
Apparently, so from what I understand, it's a different manga by the same artist, but they're set obviously in the same world because they're classmates. And they decided to, I guess, to pad things out and break things up a little bit to kind of sprinkle those into the mainline Takagi-san stories. And I think that's a fine idea because, like Ira said, it is very much the Takagi-san parts are very much, you know, it's one
same
thing.
Joke every time.
Right. It's they're spinning different variations of it, and it's adorable, but it's ultimately just like the same thing every time. So like I get the idea of wanting to include different types of content in there, but it's just so bad.
Oh yeah. Like there's never a joke. Like, they want to think that there's a joke, but it's just either people being annoying or to each other, or people being lame, or just...
Yeah, what was it like this week? They're like... Because there's, like, the three girls.
Mm-hmm.
One of them is, like, the Genki Energy girl. The other one is the weirdo, and then the other is, like, the glasses nerd girl. And
like, the nerd.
And, like, this one, they're like, let's go to the beach. And the nerd girl's like, no, I just want to read books or something. And, like, that's it. So there's like no joke. There's no punchline or anything, yeah, or like it's payoff. It's like, okay. So you have fun.
Whereas every Takagi segment has a payoff. Like, it's so bizarre.
Right. There's a build up and a payoff. Like, yeah, like I don't understand how it's the same writer, because clearly they know how to, you know, set up a joke and have a payoff and everything, and no, it's just like, all right, have fun reading your book on the beach while we go in the water, okay, and then we move on to the Takagi segment, and that's like the single biggest thing detracting from the show, I think. I don't know if it will be enough to knock it from the number two spot, but
I doubt it.
If anything, unless if anything, like that's really super. Yeah, that's so. That's more. I think that's more due to the competition than anything else. But right. Yeah, it's still a very cute and adorable and I think satisfying show. Like I really liked what I picked for our nice moment of the week this week. We actually made a call back to I think it was episode 2 when they were doing their calligraphy and they show that Nishikata actually kept the status quo sign that he wrote and hung it up on his wall. And
it was what she wrote for him.
What she wrote for did she write that for him? Okay,
yeah, she was the one that mixed up. Yeah. He wrote restraint and she wrote status quo.
Okay, so he kept the status quo and hung it on his wall because she goes to his room and it's like, oh, that's just adorable. And they don't even have to say anything.
Yeah.
You know, she just kind of chuckles at it a little bit and it's like, I love that kind of thing where it's like anything where we always talk about show don't tell, anything where you can set up a moment like that where you don't have to explain it is great. And you know, they're capable of doing that kind of thing with the show. And again, that's why I just don't understand the other segments, why they're so bad.
Yeah. I am glad though to learn that it's a finished manga. So we're probably going to actually get, like a proper ending by the end of this season. I wonder if that is why they have to pad it out. Cause like, the manga only ran so long. And so, they actually already have all the show done and they had to kind of pad it out in between.
Yeah. Well, again, I mean, I'm fine with that idea. It just the content that they chose to put in there is not up to par. So,
yeah.
All right. So let's talk about that's a good show. Watch it. Let's talk about the front runner of the Battle Royale from start to finish. Probably, I don't even think it's really close. Let's be honest. Like, I know I should be hyping up my own post. And try to like drive, interest in. Well, let's be honest.
Get those hits.
This is the best show. It's a place further than the universe. What we affectionately refer to as South Pole Girls
or Antarctica.
I hope that's not too reductive. Like,
calling I don't them think so.
Girls or whatever. But I think it's probably fair for the tone of the show.
Yeah.
Continues to be good in like every episode, which is kind of wild to me. Like all these other cute shows, like you might have one episode that's just not not as interesting, but then every episode of South Pole Girls I've been like, yeah, that was a good episode.
Yeah. I would right. definitely agree.
If anything, it might just win on consistency. So it really hasn't been any I've tried to poke some holes in it here and there and it just no.
Yeah, like maybe sometimes it's a little melodramatic. Maybe sometimes it's like a little contrived. Like there's the part where she loses her passport and they have this whole thing.
That was
a lot of fun, but it was just kind of pokey. That
I think the losing the passport part is realistic. I don't know about the finding that. Well, maybe in the finding, stuff like that happens where like, oh, that was in my other pocket in my bag or whatever. In it.
Uh-huh. So, anyway, so this show is about a high school girl who already in high school thinks she's done nothing with her life and wants to do a thing. Let me as a person who's been out of high school for a while. You're a child.
Right, exactly.
Anyway, I get it. But anyway, so she meets another girl who her dream is to go to Antarctica because her mother was a scientist who went to Antarctica and disappeared while on an expedition there. And so she feels disappeared, died. Well, you want me to just say died?
Well, I mean, they keep saying disappeared in the show, but no one's an ex-mother to Antarctica. It's not like there's like a little...
That might be mildly like, spoilerish.
Rainforest you can get into and survive off.
I think they leave it vague in the beginning and then there's a moment where it kind of...
I feel like it's pretty clear.
Well, like probably in the same episode where they bring it up, and then by the end you realize that oh, she's actually dead.
Sure.
Yeah, I think that make it pretty clear in the beginning.
Yeah. So And so they decide that they're gonna go to Antarctica, come hell or high water.
And actually accomplish it. Which, that's what we were wondering was gonna happen for the whole beginning of the season.
Right, like, for the first few episodes, it's actually a question of, will they actually make it to Antarctica? On the other hand, the opening sequence is them just hanging out in Antarctica, so...
Yeah, true enough. But, you know, it could have been like Hang On, where they have them already being musicians in the or in the ending.
Yeah,
right? Yeah, I kind of saw it as, well, okay, they'll make it to Antarctica, but will we actually see that? So then is the show going to be about them preparing and finding their way to get there, and then like it ends on them getting to Antarctica?
Right.
And it looks like, unless they're going to stall again somehow, it looks like they are actually going to get to Antarctica by like next week or very soon.
In the next episode or two.
Yeah. Again, a premise that sounds like it could be just another cute girls doing cute things type of, it's not technically a club, but kind of like that, where they end up, recruiting two other random girls, and very easily could have just been that. And it's not. There's, again, all these shows come down to execution, and the execution is so top-notch.
Yeah.
With this show, on every level. Yes. Like, whether it's even just technical stuff, it looks great. It's a very
moment-to-moment dialogue.
Yeah, it has a very unique, like,
oh yeah,
directing. Art style. The directing is great.
Voice acting is pretty good too. Like, Kana Hanazawa really playing out of type.
I mean, I just hear the Bimbogami voice every time she speaks in this show.
Well, that is her best voice, so I'm cool with that. I wonder if there's a way I can shout out Bimbogami Ga on every single podcast.
Probably.
You'll find a way.
I'll find a way. Yeah, so like everything, the art, the animation, the directing, the acting, the writing, the dialogue, everything is just so top notch. And so like, even though they're not doing something like super incredible plot wise, and you know, maybe that's even not fair. I think there is maybe more meat to the show than the other shows on the list. They do at least try to explore the reasons why these girls are wanting to go. They get into some of, the relationships and repercussions of just disappearing for 3 months, which is what they're planning on doing.
Right. They have to, like, get permission from school to, you know, leave for a few months to go to Antarctica.
And the one girl fakes her mom's signature. That was a great scene.
Or like, I was thinking, what's the girl with the bangs? Mari? Is
Mari,
her name?
Yeah.
Like, she, you know, she had, they did that episode.
The idol?
No, the would you call her the main girl?
The viewpoint character.
Got it.
Yeah, she has the whole thing with her other friend and her relationship,
right?
How that's affected, things
right,
like that.
The traditional best friend character that I'm hanging out with at the start of the show, like, goes through an arc of being like jealous that now her friend's hanging out with all these main characters,
right?
Instead of her.
I feel like that doesn't get covered super often, especially in a show that, on the surface level, is just, again, like, looks like a cute girl doing cute things type of show. So,
yeah, it was really interesting how they talked about, you know, their relationship as this, you know, kind of toxic codependency, and how they both really realized that throughout that episode.
Right.
It was a little melodramatic, but I think they, the actual meat behind it was pretty good.
The show as a whole is a bit melodramatic at times.
Yeah, any time that they get serious, it maybe gets a little too on the nose, but it's still within, like, acceptable limits.
Sure.
They're not pulling, like, a Anohana scripted by Mario Kata, cry now at the push of this button type of...
It's a little...
They might be leaning in that direction, but I don't think they're quite...
I don't think they have.
Like, sure. I feel like you can tell every episode when it's like the music swells and you're like, ah, yes, this is the part where the moral happens, but still done well.
The example I gave this week of was when they're all kind of psyching themselves up to get over the seasickness and everything. And Hinata's like, all right, let's do this. And she gets up and they're like, yeah, let's go. And they're like, Hinata, where are you going? She's like, I gotta go. And everybody just goes, and it like completely diffuses the kind of melodrama of the moment or whatever.
Right.
And, you know, so like,
right.
I'm cool with that. You know, I think they can keep doing that kind of thing.
Sure.
I think they keep
one of the funniest aspects of the show, I think, is like, at the beginning of every episode, they have this GIF that runs, and
it's their Instagram account.
With like their Twitter ads, or maybe is that it? It's supposed to be
Instagram. It's supposed to be Instagram.
Oh, okay, that makes sense. Because if you go on Twitter, a bunch of people must have gotten confused because those aren't actually real Twitter accounts. They only got them on Instagram. So there's these people that actually must have had these real Twitter accounts and then got bombarded.
Oh, the actual at Mari whatever ones that they put in there. Oh,
yeah.
Maybe they didn't check the staff didn't check beforehand that those were real Instagram accounts. So I think another thing, you know, I talked about with Laid Back Camp how like the dialogue sounds like actual teenage girls.
Yes.
You know.
God.
Giving each other a hard time or just, you know, whatever. And, you know, it's good. They do it well in Laid Back Camp. They do it fantastic in this show. And that's...
Right. The example I always remember is when they're, like, doing the training camping out in the wilderness or whatever, and they're talking when they're supposed to be going to sleep. So the youngest one says, please shut talking now.
Right.
And but I was like, when we were watching, I was like, oh, the goofy subtitle.
Right.
That's typo. And then they're like, what the hell do you mean by shut talking now? And they just, like, for the next couple minutes, just make fun of her for that.
Because that is definitely something a group of friends would do.
Oh, yeah.
It was great.
Yeah. She'll never live that down. So I mean that kind of level of realism helps, you know, really get you invested in it and adds dimension to the characters. I love the characters because they're not just like one dimensional, really. I mean, they're not super deep, maybe, but that's just because, you know, you only have so much screen time.
So one girl who like dropped out of high school and is just like doing her general education on her own while working.
See Marlon, when we were talking about best boy and best girl awards.
Right.
Hinata is best girl.
Hinata's best girl.
That's how that works. So that's why there's a best girl award, and she should win it next year.
Oh, yeah.
Also,
she's definitely.
She wears t-shirts with pictures of food on them.
So she's actually best girl. That's going to be 2018. I'm going to start campaigning now. Anime Awards 2018. Hinata for best girl.
I just think one of the things that helped establish like the naturalness of their relationships is the opening. Like, you know, the parts where they're in Antarctica and just, like, them having fun. Like, you know, Hinata takes, like, a selfie in a pool and, like, or they're doing that weird sunglasses thing, which I still don't get what they're doing, but I see that all the time. But.
Right. I mean, that's things that you would expect, like, that's things you'd expect real teenage girls to be doing, which makes it, you know.
Right.
Not that I know, not that I'm in touch with what teenage girls are up to these days, but that's what I would expect.
I just hope not.
Yeah. I probably could have found a better way to phrase that.
Wait 10 years and then you'll have niece in.
Oh God, I don't even want to think about that. But that touch of, you know, realism really makes it so you can relate to the characters, and just so well executed. I guess the only thing now is we have to see how they end it, right?
Yeah.
If our
been good up till now.
Yeah, if our main criticism is how they handle the serious parts, you know, there's at least one big drama bomb waiting with Shirase and her and making it to Antarctica and kind of coming to grips with what happened to her mother.
Right.
How they deal with that could, I don't think at this point ruin the show. I don't think there's anything the show could do, or at least I don't foresee the show doing anything that's going to be like, okay, that show is terrible by the time we're done. But it could be the difference between us calling it like, oh, that was a good show, to this is, you know, anime of the year contender, or in the top.
You never know. There could be like a Gargantua and the Virtuous Planet moment where like the last two episodes of this.
Antarctica oh, I never even watched people. Those last two episodes. I was so heartbroken with that one.
Yeah, me neither.
Well, right. So barring something like that, where they find out that it was
the same,
you know,
twist every time.
All a dream of Shirase has been in a coma for the past 20 years, and this has all been a dream. Then, other than something like that, I think the show will be fine at the very least. But, you know, will the ending and how they deal with the Shirase and her mother, will that elevate the show to the next level? Or are we just going to say, oh, that was a good show? And one day we'll look back and say, hey, remember South Pole Girls?
Yeah.
So we'll have to see how that goes. I think it's still going to win the Battle Royale.
Probably. Kept it up for like 8 or 9 episodes in a row. So.
All right. Well, I think that's just going to about do it for shows we wanted to talk about this week. We had a pile of other shows that were cut from the Battle Royale, but probably aren't really worth getting into, other than I was kind of sad to have to cut Miss Koizumi. Not a great show, but I was enjoying it, at least.
Yeah, that sounded like such a bizarre thing. Like, not this.
It wasn't even really bizarre. It was just, there was kind of a low ceiling for it, and it was, like, enjoyable, but it wasn't really going to get any better than it was.
Also, the ramen that you were describing was just
There's some weird ramen in there. I can't remember any of the weird examples off the top of my head right now.
Go for some ramen.
Something like pineapple ramen, right?
Yeah, there was one with pineapple. Because the whole thing of that show, it's called, you know, Miss Koizumi loves ramen noodles, and she does indeed love ramen noodles. So like every episode she goes to some different ramen place, and sometimes the ramen is normal and sometimes it is weird. And then she has her lesbian stalker classmate.
Right.
But I mean, it was I don't want to be an apologist for lesbian stalkers, but it was,
or any stalkers, in fact.
Or any stalkers for that matter. That's the important part. That's the important part. Yes. I thought it was, in my opinion, harmless. But and it's just a fun, you know, fun show. The there was the ramen facts part, but the rest of it was kind of like a dumb comedy thing. And again, you know, I love my dumb comedies.
What about the cutest? What the cutest show of Pokemon Sun and Moon?
I have seen some of those gifs. That is pretty cute.
Yeah, it seemed like they've been killing it with that Sun Moon adaptation, like adaptation. Like it's
good. Rowlet just sleeps in his bag.
Yeah,
his backpack just has sleeping Rowlet in it all the time.
I just love when what's the giant bear thing that carries away Team
Rocket? Beware, right?
Beware
doesn't blast off anymore. Beware just shows up.
Oh, really?
That's my favorite part. Because that's like what every episode he appears out of nowhere.
Whenever Team Rocket's Team Rocket doesn't show up every episode.
Whenever they get blown up or whatever, Beware shows up out of nowhere to carry them off to safety.
That's my favorite
joke in that. But
Beware just shows up in a ridiculous new way every time.
I hope we don't have to tell people about Pokemon because that's just always there. But it is.
So recently had its 1,000th episode.
Yeah, we mentioned that last week.
Wow. Right, that's right. We did.
And when we complained about Pikachu giving everyone seizures, that famous incident. So we don't need to
get it down.
Well, yeah.
Not even until 20 years
later.
We don't
need to get back into that again. So, all right, so that'll do it. Let's just wrap things up then. You can find everything that else that we do on theglorioblog.com. So all of our writing, you can follow the cute anime battle royale that I keep mentioning and trying to hype up every opportunity. People seem to be liking that, so I'm kind of glad. I've been having fun with that. So all of our writing is available there. You can follow us on Twitter at theglorioblog. That's probably the best way to get our updated on when posts go out or whatever else is happening with us. Please, for the podcast, please leave us
like,
a review,
comment, subscribe.
A rating. Yeah. Like, comment, subscribe. I don't even know if you can do likes on. I don't think you can.
You can't subscribe on iTunes.
on yes, you can subscribe on iTunes or the iOS podcast app. So please do that if you can. Leave us any other feedback. You know, we are learning the process here, trying to get better every week, and you know, hopefully everybody's enjoying it. So that's about it. Any final thoughts before we wrap up? Any last minute shout outs?
Oh man, I'm so waiting for Lion. Like, next week cannot come soon enough.
Yeah, tell me about it, because next week should be the next episode of Today's Menu at Emya Family.
Oh man.
Yes. I thought about talking about that, but there hasn't been a new episode since
it's the last supposed time to be monthly.
Because it's monthly, so maybe we'll fit that back in. But that does qualify
dark horse winner of Kujo Battle Royale.
we'll throw that in the last episode.
It's like the Gilgamesh of the Cube Battle Royale anime.
Shows up at the last minute. All right.
Yeah. So maybe we'll get a chance to talk about that another episode. So, all right. So thank you everybody for listening. Thank you guys for joining me, and we will catch everybody next time.
Bye.
Bye.